Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 15th of September, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll find out about this Friday's Recovery Poetry Jam at the Canvas Community Arts Studio with Guy Marks from Juneau Youth Services, Gus Marks from Juneau Youth Services, and Christine Nami Erickson from the Canvas Community Arts Studio. We'll also talk improv with guests Eric Caldwell and visiting creativity teacher Michael Robinson. J.P. Vargas and Ari Rome will be giving us a musical preview of their performances at the Alaskan this weekend. Also, Ari is going to be performing at the Seafood Festival. And Nancy Naturney will be here with news and views about local arts during Arts Up this day on June afternoon.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Cherokee Nation Election Commission has decided to allow descendants of tribal members of former slaves, known as freedmen, to participate in the upcoming election for principal chief. But as KGOU's Kurt Gorney reports, it's still not known if their votes will count.
The chairwoman of the Cherokee Election Commission said the members voted Wednesday to let any Cherokee freedmen already registered to vote cast a provisional ballot in the September 24th election. Susan Plum said if the tribe's Supreme Court decides the freedmen descendants can legally vote, the commission will be able to certify the election. If the court decides they should not have voted, the commission will still be able to preserve the election results. The Election Commission meeting came after the federal government told the Cherokee Nation to restore rights and benefits to about 2,800 descendants of the freedmen. Last month, the tribe's high court reinstated a constitutional amendment that requires members to have a Cherokee ancestor listed on the Dawes rolls. In a related matter, the tribe's attorney general has agreed with a motion asking the tribe's Supreme Court to reconsider an order that effectively stripped citizenship from the descendants of the freedmen. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gwartney in Norman, Oklahoma.
A northern Nevada tribe is making a big commitment to solar power. Willie Albright reports.
The Reno Sparks Indian Colony recently installed a 100-kilowatt solar power system in Hungry Valley. It will provide about 75% of the electricity for a community education center and save the tribe about $40,000 a year. The colony has already built a 40-kilowatt solar panel system for its Head Start Children's program. That offsets 57% of its energy consumption. Colony Planning Director Scott Nebeski says these are two of three systems being built, with more than $1 million in rebates from NV Energy's Solar Generations program. Nebeski says from a business perspective it's a no-brainer, but it's also a powerful example to colony members about their traditions.
It's a great way for me to talk to some of the youth in the community when they're struggling. They're saying, well, how does my ancestors' belief in seven generations relate to the 21st century? Well, about living in a sustainable way, you build the solar projects, and it's consistent with those past principles.
A third system will come online at the end of the month to help power the colony's health center. Nebeski says the next step will be to install an industrial-grade solar array that will enable the colony to sell power back to NV Energy. For National Native News, I'm Willie Albright.
Montana's U.S. senators are asking Congress to award Eloise Cobell, the lead plaintiff in the historic Indian Trust lawsuit Cobell versus Salazar, the Congressional Gold Medal. Matt Laszlo reports.
For more than a decade, Eloise Cobell served as treasurer of the Blackfeet tribe, and she kept finding bad accounting on behalf of the U.S. government that held the tribe's trust. In 1996, she filed a lawsuit against the U.S. on behalf of more than 500,000 people. Congress later settled the suit with a payment of more than $3 billion. Montana Senator Max Baucus says her work was remarkable.
She's a wonderful person who took up the cause way before anybody else to get justice for a lot of Americans.
Cobell went through cancer surgery earlier this year, which her friend, Montana Senator John Tester, says is where his thoughts are.
She's been a great lady and a great leader in Indian country, and she's fighting the toughest battle of her life right now, and she's fought a lot of tough battles.
It's still unclear when Congress will vote whether to award Cobell the Congressional Gold Medal, the highest honor Congress can bestow. For National Native News, I'm Matt Laszlo in Washington.
The U.S. Department of Justice this week announced nearly $120 million to address tribal justice and safety. 150 American Indian and Alaska Native nations will receive funds. The awards are to enhance law enforcement practices and sustain crime prevention and intervention efforts in 8 purpose areas, including public safety and community policing. During this week in 1884, the Haskell Institute in Lawrence, Kansas was dedicated for educating Indian youth. Today, more than 1,000 American Indian and Alaska Native students attend Haskell Indian Nations University each semester. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:05 and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our first guests are here to talk about this Friday's Recovery Poetry Jam at the Campus Community Arts Studio going on Friday from 6:30 until 9 o'clock. Gus Marks from the Juneau Youth Services and Christy Nami Erickson from Campus. Thank you for coming down to the station, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
So first of all, how did the collaboration develop?
Well, this is our 6th year doing the Poetry Jam for the Voices of Recovery. And for the last 5 years, UAS has been really generous in offering us a room out in Hendrickson Annex. Well, this year we noticed I had a lot of people in the previous years saying that they preferred if we could have it downtown. And then this year, for the last 12 months or so, there's been a poetry slam group that's been meeting month after month, probably more than once a month sometimes. And so, to be honest, I was hoping to steal some of their expertise and make it a little easier on myself this time around. And, you know, there's a bunch of agencies involved, a bunch of nonprofits, but it really has made this year a little simpler, a little easier to have that skill.
Yeah, we're happy to be used by the recovery group. When Gus emailed us at Wish Kennedy Poetry Slam to collaborate with them, we were immediately excited at the idea. I think month after month, our slam has been a real community gathering of people who talk about some pretty personal issues, and so it certainly didn't frighten us and certainly excited us about the idea of welcoming new guests into that community who might have some things to share.
What's the difference between a slam and a jam?
I'm not sure there's a big difference between the two.
They're basically the same. We're just marketing to a different group, I think, either of us.
And it's a pretty comfortable gathering. I think, you know, we're assuming there'll be roughly 60 to 80 people showing up. And it's not going to be super competitive. You're not going to have people really slamming each other as much as they're just going to be reading their work. And for the most part, you're going to see a lot of people who appreciate each other and like to hear what's being said.
Yeah, I don't know. Nahan and I tend to wrestle.
Oh, good. Well, that'd be entertaining, too.
No, yeah. The slam is just a word that is used nationally to describe the type of competition that we have. But it's certainly like a jam, or we're fine with that type of wording based on the idea that it is just people getting together and reading poetry. And there is a competition in it, but I think the environment is more supportive than it is competitive.
Do you think that writing a poem that talks about recovery is harder to write than one that just because it just deals with such painful memories and emotions?
I think it certainly could be painful. I think that any art that's really honest about difficult subjects can be painful to you know, think and reflect and be clear in expressing those things. But at the same time, I hope, or I truly believe as an artist, that there's a certain relief and even a joy, I think, that comes out of talking about painful subjects, especially when it is tainted with such hopeful subjects like recovery. And I think even more so to be able to get through that process and, you know, have something to present and then be able to share with others and maybe share with peers, you know, people who've gone through similar experiences is not painful and actually is really wonderful and is a really beautiful feeling to be a part of and even just to observe.
And I think if in the last 5 years we've been doing this, I think you saw a lot of people, a lot of catharsis, a lot of people gathering together and saying, I understand. I know what's going on. And people are getting a lot out of it. You know, even just the people in the audience, since a lot of people in the audience, we're all touched by recovery from one person or the other, whether it's you personally or it's your father or it's your mother. And I think as a crowd, they really bonded each year.
Yeah.
I mentioned there's two types of catharsis. One is in the writing of the poem, and the other one is presenting it in front of a group of appreciative people.
I think in my case, I think it would be a lot easier to write it. It would be really tough to stand up there in front. These guys have courage to be standing up there in front of these people, and just letting your heart out is impressive.
Well, I think it kind of feeds itself month after month, too. I mean, that's part of what the spoken word scene is about, and part of why Nahan and I originally created the series, to really create a venue where folks could share, you know, work that they'd worked so hard on, and really personal things that may have been difficult to write, because I think there is a joy and there is a healing that happens in sharing that with a community, and also creating a community out of it. I think month after month, we've even in months where we don't have a theme like recovery, we see some pretty heartfelt, sometimes painful work emerge, and I think we just become closer and become stronger and really feed into an empowerment as individuals and as a community because of it.
I'm talking to Gus Marks and Christine Emmy Erickson about the Poetry Jam, which is the Recovery Poetry Jam, going on this Friday from 6:30 to 9 o'clock at the Canvas Community Arts Studio. What's the format of the evening, Christy?
Well, 6 o'clock is when you come to sign up, and we're really trying to push that because I know in months past even we'll have a line before 6 o'clock for folks to sign up at 6 o'clock to get in line for the Poetry Slam, which is kind of fun. And we really want to make sure that folks who've never been there before get in and are able to get a slot. At 6:30, we'll start with an open mic, and that's anything goes, songs, poems, hula hoop dances, you name it, we're game for it. And then at 7 o'clock we take a quick break, and at 7:15 we start the Poetry Slam. We'll have 12 contestants in the Poetry Slam are available. Three rounds. Every poet reads one poem in the first round. We have judges in the audience who do public scoring, and then a certain amount of contestants move on to the second round, and then two move on to the third round, and then we have a final winner at the end of the night.
So the contestants have already been chosen?
Nope. You have to sign up at 6.
What happens if there's more than 12 people sign up?
It's only the first 12. That's why you got to get there on time. Get there on time, poets.
Do you have to be in recovery to attend?
No, but we'd like that theme. So, again, if you have experienced it, whether through your own experiences or through family, friends, anything you've seen, then it's fair game.
Yeah, like all of our themes, it's not a mandatory theme, but there is extra points given towards adhering to the theme as far as being a participant in the slam goes. And recovery, it's kind of loose as far as the month is drug, alcohol, and mental illness, and we're hoping, you know, to see different types of recovery themes emerge in the slam. And of course, I mean, as we talked about the importance of community and community response and being able to share that with folks, it's really open to anybody who's ready and willing to listen and to support. If you're one of those type of people, then we'll hope you'll be in the audience.
And I understand there's a prize.
Oh, three prizes, in fact. We've got first place will be $100, second place $75, and third place $25. I think we discussed, because the last two are really competing with each other, that's why there's that big gap between second, first, and then third's way back.
That's a lot of money. We're used to every month we have a prize of $25, so we're really happy to collaborate with the recovery. No. But it is exciting to see, you know, a little bit of money be attached to folks who are going to get up, and if that gives them a little bit of extra courage, then I'm glad that that's what can do it.
And how are the poems going to be judged?
Poems are judged on creativity, on presentation, as far as, you know, really putting your heart into it and getting into it, and originality. Poems have to be less than 3 minutes. I don't know. We kind of make up this criteria each month.
I think the plan was to have five people in the audience who are going to do the scoring from 0 to 10.
Yep, 0 to 10.
And then someone's going to score those, add those numbers up.
Yep, two judges already have been picked. They're from the Voices of Recovery organizing committee. We have a third one who actually works at REACH, and it also happens to be on the National Council Against
Alcohol and Drug Dependency,
yes,
NCADD.
Yes, NCADD. So it's a great kind of saddle person. And then we'll have two other just community members. So we'll just pick those on the night of.
The 6th Annual Recovery Poetry Jam starts at 6:30 at the Canvas Community Arts Studio. If you'd like to register, get there at 6 o'clock. Get there at 6 o'clock. Get there at 6 o'clock is the word. Gus Marks has been my guest along with Christine Emmy Erickson from the Canvas Community Arts Studio. Is there a cost to get in?
No cost. We suggest a $5 donation, which goes towards our continual programming to make it a low-cost and accessible art form for Juno to enjoy.
Christine, Gus, thank you for coming by.
Yeah, okay. Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having us.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 15th of September, 2011. It's the birthday of the man who wrote, "We promise according to our hopes, we fulfill according to our fears." François VI, the Duc de La Rochefoucauld, born in 1613, and famous to us for his maxims, his epigrams, including, "There are good marriages, but no delicious ones." It's the birthday of the first true American novelist, James Fenimore Cooper, born Burlington, New Jersey, 1789, the 11th of 12 children. When he was just a baby, the family moved to the wilderness of upstate New York, and he ran wild in the woods with his many, many siblings. Went to Yale, where he was thrown out of school for making a donkey sit in his professor's chair. Best remembered today for the Leatherstocking Tales, novels about the frontiersman Natty Bumppo, including The Last of the Mohicans. It's the birthday of the humorist and drama critic Robert Benchley, 1889, born Worcester, Massachusetts. When he was 9 years old, his older brother Edmund was killed in the Spanish-American War, and his mother cried out, "Why couldn't it have been Robert?" Robert Benchley became managing editor at Vanity Fair in 1919, and that's when he met Dorothy Parker. They became close friends, went off to Life magazine, and then to The New Yorker, and then to Hollywood, where he wrote and acted in several short films with his monologues. He was a heavy drinker who died in 1945 of cirrhosis of the liver. Robert Benchley, who said, "There are two kinds of people in the world, those who believe there are two kinds of people in the world, and those who don't." It's the birthday of Agatha Christie, the mystery writer, born in England, in Torquay, in 1890. During the World Wars, she worked at a hospital dispensary, which gave her a knowledge of pharmaceuticals and poisons that she used well in her murder mysteries, including Murder on the Orient Express, Death on the Nile, and her play The Mousetrap. She was married to the archaeologist Sir Max Mallowan. Agatha Christie, who once said, "An archaeologist is the best husband a woman can have. The older she gets, the more interested he is in her." And it's the birthday of the Nigerian novelist Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie, born in Enugu, 1977, author of two novels, Purple Hibiscus and Half of a Yellow Sun, often writing about the Nigerian-Biafran War of the late 1960s. Here's a poem for today by Hayden Carruth, "They Accuse Me of Not Talking." North people known for silence, long dark of winter, Norland families go months without talking, Eskimos also, except bursts of sporadic, eerie song. South people different, right and wrong, all crystal there, and they squabble, no fears, though they praise North silence. "Ho," they say, "look at them deep thinkers, them strong philosophical types, men of peace." But take notice, please, of what happens. Winter on the brain. You're literate, so words are what you feel. Then you're struck dumb. To which love can you speak the words that mean dying and going insane and the relentless futility of the real? Pauva Hayden Carruth, they accuse me of not talking from his collected shorter poems published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Time is 3:20, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Our next guests are members of Morley Impoverished, Eric Caldwell and Michael Christensen. Also another Michael in the room from Vancouver Theatre Sports, again, Michael Robinson. And they're doing two shows this weekend at the Hangar Ballroom at 8 o'clock and also doing little community workshops. A couple of Michaels and Eric, thank you very much for coming down to the station.
Thank you for having us.
So you're going to Hawaii first. Let's talk about that trip with Eric.
Absolutely. We're heading off to Improvaganza, the 2011 Festival of Improvisation in Hawaii. They have invited us. We are the first Alaskan improv group to be invited to perform at a national festival, and we're all really excited for the opportunity.
And when does that happen?
That's happening next week. We're going to be performing at 10 p.m. on the 23rd, on the Friday night, opening for a couple of Seattle groups at the Arts and at the Arts at Marks in Honolulu.
And you're doing a thing called an Improbable Act?
Yes.
Did you describe it?
Sure. That show, we get a play that's been written by a local playwright. We take the first page of that play, perform it as a stage reading, and go from there and improvise the remainder as a one-act play.
Cool. And you're also performing with the Not Safe for Improv group at the University of Alaska Southeast this weekend?
Yes. Not Safe for Improv, they're in their third season. They've been working as a weekly jam session down at UAS. People are invited to come down any Sunday from 4 to 6 and either watch or participate. The veterans of the group have a performance troupe, and they're opening up for us on both nights.
Sounds fun. Also in the studio with us is Michael Robinson from Vancouver Theater Sports. He's performing this weekend, as well as doing some workshops. Michael, thank you for coming into the station today.
I'm very honored to be here. I'm a big fan of NPR. We don't have it in Canada. Every time I go to the States, I tune in and go, oh, it's so great.
Tell me about Vancouver Theater Sports, if you could.
We're one of the oldest and biggest improv companies in Canada and probably the world. We started our company back in 1979, and we took up our own theater in Vancouver in 1983. And we're a very large company, and we've trained lots of big people. Some of our previous stars would be Colin Mochrie and Ryan Stiles from Whose Line Is It Anyway, and lots of other people have gone off into film and television. And, yeah.
Is your background in acting or comedy?
Acting.
Yeah, anybody can chime in on the answer to this one, if there is an answer. What separates good and bad improv?
Well, bad improv, to me, is when what you're looking at doesn't feel like it's spontaneous. It looks like the actors are just trying to be funny, and you have the sense that they were doing this last week, and they're lying to you. They're not really improvising. They're just doing their little joke, and they're telling you it's improv. You feel, hey, they're just doing this every time. Great improv should put you in a state of awe. You should be looking and witnessing an act of creation, and acknowledging the fact that what you're seeing has never been done before, and will never be repeated, and yet it's somehow genius and brilliant. And really, improv always sits on a grayscale between those two points.
I think bad improv is improv that you can tell what they're going to say before they say it, that there's no sense of surprise, and that we strive to make the unexpected choice and in our improv, and that's how we're trying to be, you know, better, if not great.
Mm-hmm. And something that you'll see a fair bit in improv, when people get too into their heads, it's not only whether or not you can predict what they're going to say next, but someone might get an idea in their head, and as the scene's going on, if something else comes up that invalidates that idea, you have to just let it go and move on. If an improviser's not in the moment, they will hang on to that. They'll come out with it a half beat late, and it will just sound completely out of place.
Keys to success?
listening.
Not a big one.
Not thinking.
Not thinking. You have to be really present, and you have to be happy not knowing what's going on. I see one of the big things is you learn to love being unprepared, which is a big thing for us because we get so positively reinforced to be prepared for everything. You prepare for tests, you prepare to cross the street, you prepare to drive. But for an improviser, you have to love not knowing what the other people are doing. And when you really love that, then you're going to have a good time.
Michael knows what he's talking about. He's done over 5,000 shows. You want to reflect on a couple maybe outstanding shows, if you remember?
Oh, there's so many. I guess some of my favorites were we went to New Zealand back in 1990, and we performed at the Commonwealth Games Arts Festival. And then they took us on a tour through New Zealand, and we played these massive opera houses, old opera houses built at the turn of the century that would see 2,000 people. And we performed in these towns, like a town of 16,000, but with a huge opera house. And it was full. And it was just stunning to play in these places. And I was fortunate to play with some of the best improvisers in New Zealand and Australia and North America on that tour. And it was a phenomenal experience. Yeah.
You're pretty well traveled. What country do you think has the best sense of humor?
Kenya.
Why?
If go there. People laugh all the time. It's the happiest place they've ever been. Kenyans find the humor in things that we don't normally find the humor in. Simple things. They see power relationships more accurately than we do because they live in a world that has very definite power relationships. So they see those forces better than we do. They're not as opaque, and they just laugh at anything.
You're kind of equating good improv with lots of comedy. Does it always have to be funny?
No. It has to be surprising, I think, you know, to agree with Mike. It doesn't have to be funny, but you have to see the act of creation.
Eric, you want to talk about the public workshops on Saturday?
Absolutely. Michael can absolutely chime in here as well.
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yes. We're overusing that word today. We have two workshops coming up on Saturday. One of them from 9 a.m. to noon is called Creativity by Choice. The second one from 2 to 5 p.m. is called The Cinema Game. And I'll turn over to Michael for a description of both of those.
Well, Creativity by Choice, we're looking at the very sort of the roots, the foundations of what it is to be creative, which is obviously part of the act of improvising, and addressing what that is semantically and what it is practically to be creative. And the cinema game is for more advanced people. It's dealing with the rules of social behavior and situations and creating characters and having to be interesting in what apparently is a boring situation.
Creativity is not an easy process to learn. How do you teach somebody to be creative who may not be necessarily the most creative person in the world?
The very first thing I do is just tell them to give up trying to be creative. Like, semantically, it's a huge problem because what you have with creativity is this idea that you can make something out of nothing. And it's false. What we do really when we're being creative is associate. So I just let them let go of creativity and tell them, just associate. And I give them sort of lessons or handles upon which it becomes easier to associate. I mean, look at Shakespeare. He took other people's stories, other people's plays, rewrote them for a cast of characters, which was a permanent company. So he wrote the characters given the strength of his own actors. He was associating. He wasn't creating as much as he was just associating off things that he already had. It's about being associative. A creative person controls how they associate more than a non-creative person does, or what we call a non-creative person.
I'm going to talk with Michael Robinson from Vancouver Theatre Sports. He's one of the participants involved in the Morally Impoverished Three-Ring Improv presentation this weekend at the Hangar Ballroom. Two shows at 8 o'clock. Format of the shows, Eric or Michael?
The format of the shows?
Mm-hmm.
Not Safe for Improv is going to be performing a short-form show, which is similar to what you might see on Whose Line Is It Anyway? We will be performing an improbable act, our improvised one-act play. And our work with Michael is going to differ on each of the two nights. On Friday night, we're going to be performing a format called 10 Scenes, in which we receive suggestions for scenes from the audience and present them one at a time. On Saturday, I'll be doing a duo show with Michael. I guess the format's just called chairs.
Yeah. We move chairs around, the audience tells us when to stop, and we have to use the geography of the chairs to influence how we sit in them, and then we check each other out and see how we're sitting in them and create characters and situations from that.
And that's going on Friday and Saturday night at the Hangar Ballroom?
8 o'clock both nights.
Is there a cost to get in?
There is a cost to get in. It's $15, $10 for students. Tickets are available both at Hearthside Books and at the door. And for people who are interested in the workshops, they can either contact me directly at junoimprov@gmail.com or by phone at 209-8958, or just show up on Saturday and we'll get you in.
And where are those workshops taking place?
Those workshops are taking place at the Hangar Ballroom.
Everything's happening at the Hangar.
Everything's happening at the Hangar.
All right, Michael Christensen, Eric Caldwell, and Michael Robinson, thank you for coming down to the station tonight.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Next, some music from Ed Littlefield and Friends. They're performing also Friday night at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. Some of the music from Ed Littlefield and Friends. They're going to be performing Friday night at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center along with a cast of musicians and perhaps even some divas or two. Also going on Friday night, Juneau Douglas High School versus Thunder Mountain High School Junior Varsity game at the Team AHS field at 5 o'clock. Also the Bears versus Notre Dame BC Varsity football game is Saturday, September 17th at 8 o'clock. It's country night. They suggest that you throw in your Western wear and come on down to Whoop and Holler for the Bears while you enjoy some down-home country hopeful fun. Entertainment, games, and prizes are available. That's football this weekend at the high schools. Coming up next, some live music from J.P. Vargas and Ari Rome.
Howdy.
Hello.
Thanks for having us. My name's J.P. Vargas. This is Ari Rome. We are Burn the Field, and this is the Bar Song. Thank you.
Line them up tonight, I'm buying. Line them up, let's knock them down. Well, let's drown our tears in 5-0-10 beers. Let's go, go out and paint the town. I got money in my pocket tonight. If you need a helping hand, say the dollar, baby, it has no owners, only spenders. Gonna spend it while I can. Bar is closed and you're walking away. Said we're closed and you're walking away. And you're the one good thing that I saw today. Lord knows I tried. And I'd be happy if you called. Happy if you called. Down in this sleepy bedroom town, I should be home and in my bed. Go downtown, get a cool pint of brown, sit and drink with you instead. If you got money in your pocket tonight, I might need a helping hand. Say the dollar, babe, it has no owners, only spenders. Gonna spend it while I can. Bar is closed and we're walking away. Said it's closed and we're walking away. And you're the one good thing that happened today. Lord knows I tried. I'm so happy that you called. I'm happy that you called. I'm happy that you called. I'm happy that you called.
J.P. Vargas and Ari Rome live in the KTUO studios here today. J.P. and Ari, thank you very much for coming down to the station and talking about your music.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A quick mention, Ari, you're going to be playing with Sean Tracy at the Festival of Seafood this Saturday at the Yacht Club, so thank you for doing that.
Oh, again, my pleasure. Happy to do it.
J.P., you want to talk a little bit about your background and inspirations?
Yeah, you know, I actually cut my teeth learning acoustic up here in Juneau, moved to the L.A. area, worked on the film Limbo, that was shot here in Juneau, and moved to Los Angeles. Been playing a lot in the Portland area. I've had the pleasure of playing at Willie Nelson's family picnic the last 4th of July down in Bee Cave in Austin, Texas. This year it was in Fort Worth. heroes, Towns Van Zandt, Guy Clark, guys like that, Steve Earle, big influences on me, heartfelt Texas folk. Really love it. We will be at the Alaskan Hotel Friday and Saturday night, so come on down. I think we're going to hear for Towns now, right?
We're going to close out this part of the show with you.
Yeah.
I've got a few more things to ask you.
Yeah, okay, great.
Life on the road.
Life on the road, my friend. well, you know, it can be fun. It's definitely a double-edged sword. Of course, it's always a pleasure to come up here in places like Juneau and Austin. Galveston is a great town. I've had a chance to play with. I do work as well, so have to balance my time between playing and working. It's definitely a double-edged sword.
When you're writing a song, how do you know when it's finished?
I write from the inside out. Most of my songs are very personal experience. A lot of times, I always start with a melody, always start with the chords, and then go to the lyrics. And you just get that feeling in your gut where you know it's finished. A lot of times you'll go out, you'll gig a couple different versions of it, and the one that gets the best response, you know, is definitely the one you go with.
But when you're listening to a song that's written by somebody else, what makes you want to learn it?
You have to be careful. I have to be careful with the kind of music I listen to. When you listen to music, it has a tendency to show up in your music. I think it's natural human nature to kind of copycat some stuff. So I'm very cautious as to the music that I listen to. And I have very high standards, and I try to only listen to music that is by the greats that I do want to be influenced by, because it just naturally has a tendency to show up in your music.
Ari, tell me about your dobro there, if you could, please.
It's basically just a regular old guitar with a hubcap stuck in it. It's a resonator guitar, I guess, and it's like a lap steel, I guess you would. I guess you can't see me here on the radio, but you play it laying on your lap flat and use the steel bar in your left hand to do the whole slidey thing. And it's, I don't know, I was always drawn to slide guitar since I was a pretty young player, and I just naturally sort of gravitated to this instrument, and here I am today.
JP, you want to tell me about your guitar?
Yeah, well, I'd love to, actually. I'm a collector of vintage and handmade acoustic guitars. This guitar actually is an exact copy of a 1938 Gibson J35 made by one of the true masters of luthery, John Greven, out of Portland, Oregon. He builds in the vintage style of pre-World War II guitars. This is feather light and resonant with a very dry vintage tone. Unlike a lot of modern guitars, I really love the builders like John Greven that build in that 1930s vintage style. The tone isn't for everyone. If you love vintage guitars, you would love a Greven guitar. I also am a big, big fan of Collings Guitars out of Austin, Texas, and own a handful of those as well.
All right. I've been talking to J.P. Vargas and Ari Rome. They're going to be performing at the Alaskan this weekend. What can we expect to hear?
We're going to play mostly original music. We're going to do some covers by Towns Van Zandt, Guy Clark, and one of my personal favorites, Steve Earle. And
we have a friend of ours that came up as well, a terrific drummer by the name of Brad Rosen, who's been a stone cold pro for a long, long time, and we're really happy to have him be here because he actually is Alaska is the 50th state that he's played a gig in.
Yeah,
so
the last
his first
state
trip here. So
yeah, the last
we
state
happy
that he's never
up.
Played a gig in. So big trip for him, and he
we're
was
really
with
happy
a,
to have him.
He was with a band, a very well-known band called Little Women, and also Jerry Joseph and the Jack Mormons.
All right, J.P. Vargas and Ari Rome is going to be hearing a little bit of the tune called For Towns.
Thanks for having us, Jeff.
Tried to break my own heart last night. Can't turn it off or down. Right across the sky, and the words fell down in the darkest night. And I closed my eyes, and there was towns. How close can you cut it to the bone? Blues dropped down his cheeks somewhere southwest of San Antonio. Flying in his shoes tonight back home. 12 years gone by, waiting around to die. Fare you well, fare you well. I tried to drink myself to sleep last night. Try to cut the signal down. Reached across the sky and the words fell down. The darkness light and I closed my eyes and there was town. 12 years gone by, went around and died. Flying shoes across the sky.
J.P. Vargas and doing this tune called For Towns. Time is 3:46 and you're tuned to KTOO News in Juneau.
Support comes from listeners like you and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
And it's that popular time of the week when we find out what's happening in the artistic community with our guest, Nancy DeCherney from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council.
Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Nancy.
There's too much to do.
Too much to do. I know. What another weekend. It's getting that way in general.
Oh, man.
And it's your fault. For
it's my fault. Blame me. I'm used to it. Okay, then. There's a lot of stuff going on. Tonight at 6 o'clock, there's an open house. If people are interested in talking with the city and borough about the plans for the Capitol School Park improvements, that's at 8, from 6 to 8 at the Assembly Chambers. Seems like that's kind of important. Friday is when it all hits. At 5:15, all weekend long, Rainforest Yoga Center is having something they're calling Bamboo Asana. They're fundraising for a bamboo floor over there. At 6 p.m., there's a three-stage mountain bike tour of Eagle Crest that the Juneau Freewheelers are doing. There's all kinds of information about it. You can get a hold of Cycle Alaska or go to cycleak.com for more information about that. It's $5 for an event or $10 for all three of them, and it goes through the week, or Friday and Saturday. 6:30, Recovery Poetry Jam over at the Canvas. It's at 223 Seward Street. It's part of the Recovery Month stuff.
And if you're interested in taking part, get there at 6, because that's when registration begins, and it goes for the first 12 participants.
And it's becoming really, really popular, so maybe you should come at 5:30.
Why not?
Maybe the pie in the sky lady will be open and you could have pie for dinner. That'd be good. Okay. 7 o'clock, it's Alexander Tutinoff. Opens up the evenings at Egan out at the University of Alaska Southeast Egan Lecture Hall. He'll be doing Liszt and I don't remember what, Prokofiev, I think. This is free, and you can get more information about his programs and also if you want to sign up for master classes with him by calling 796-6405. At 7 o'clock, there is live jazz with Jim Knoll and Doug Bridges at the Zephyr Restaurant. You can celebrate Mexican Independence Day at Latino's Restaurant. Tickets are $10. You can get them in a couple of places around town. More information about that is 463-4340. Dan Hobson's playing classical guitar at the Baranoff, and the Gold Town is showing Beginners at 8 o'clock. We have Too Much. We have a lot. We have the Native Jazz Quartet. This is Ed Littlefield and his group. Have you talked with them?
I'm going to be talking to them tomorrow.
All right.
We have a little bit of music we're going to play at the background at the end of the show.
They are just amazing. He has got a quartet of that includes the youngest of the Marsalis clan. So this is going to be great. It's over at the Jack. You can get tickets at all of the bookstores, at the Jack, and online. So don't miss this opportunity. They're just on a CD release tour, and it's really fabulous, as you will hear in a moment. It's the second annual Three Ring Improv, brought to you by Morally Improverished. The events will be going on, starts Friday night at 8 at the Hangar Ballroom, and you can get tickets at Hearthside Books and at the door. And then on Saturday, all day, there'll be workshops and then a performance again on Saturday evening. The Great Alaska Bluegrass Band is out at Squire's both Friday and Saturday night, starting at 8:30. And let's see, Saturday you can start your bamboo asana stuff at 9 o'clock in the morning. It's the second annual Day of Play. All of the CBJ Parks and Recreation facilities will be open for free, and there's going to be prizes and all sorts of fun. You can get more information or the schedule at 586-5226 or call Parks and Rec. It is, let's see, the Saturday thing is at 9:30 over at JEDC, 523-2300. You need to register for that ahead of time. They're doing them every Saturday, though, so if it sounds interesting, get that going. Turning the Tides Rummage Sale out at Nugget Mall, 10 o'clock. If you've got stuff that you don't want to really put into the landfill, but you think somebody might want to put in their closet, bring it over. You can give a call to 209-4102 and find out what's going on there. I feel like I'm missing something really important on Saturday.
It's the Festival of Seafood.
There it is. I knew it was going to be there. You want to talk about that?
It starts at 4 o'clock with a tutored beer tasting from the folks by the Alaskan Brewing Company, and they always do a great job, and we could learn some of the facts and reasons why they make their such great beer there.
And then there's seafood.
And the seafood starting at 5 o'clock until 7:30. We have a halibut cataganti and great barbecued salmon, variety of salads. We've got a lot of local businesses helping out on that, so we'd like to thank them. Abby's Kitchen Taco Fisheries and the Silver Bow Inn and the Alaska Brewing Company.
It's down at the Yacht Club, and you can get tickets both at K2 and at the Jack and online.
And I need to say Northern Cato, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. At 7 o'clock, if you missed the Jazz Divas last Saturday, you really missed quite a performance, but you have a second opportunity. Several of them, including Kari and Kit and Shona, I think, will be over at T.K. McGuire's Prospector Hotel with Tom Loker and David Shakely. They are recommending that you get reservations, 586-3737. It was fabulous. So if you did miss them last year or last Saturday, try it again. It's the first of this season's barn dances up at St. Anne's Parish Hall at 7:30. More information about that at 463-3212. Again, the improv folks at 8 o'clock over at the Hangar Ballroom, Great Alaska Bluegrass out at Squires, and Latin Dancing at Latino's. On Sunday, now you said the tram rides are $2?
That's right. They say they'd like to say thank you to Juneau residents and inviting them to join them on the tram Sunday, September 18th. Juneau residents should identify themselves with their local ID and receive a $2 tram ticket. And the best part is that local Juneau residents will receive a 50% discount on purchases at Raven Eagle Gifts, and some shop exclusions do apply, but that's happening on Sunday. And I don't know exactly the time it's open, but it should be a lot of fun.
Very nice. I hope the weather is good, and it's really nice of them to offer that to us all. Let's see. The Gold Town Nickelodeon has their kids' matinee at 2 o'clock. They're showing Red Balloon and White Mane. You can get more information by going onto their website or calling 586-2875. It's the Tri-Rotary International Potluck at 5 o'clock. Anybody who's interested in their international programs, anybody who's participated in them, you are invited. It is at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, and you can contact a Rotary Club member for more information. I don't have a phone number about it. It's also International Folk Dancers and Ballroom Dancing over at the Racquetball Club. On Monday, the 19th, we start the Week of Human Rights. The Juneau Human Rights Commission will have several different sort of programs and opportunities for discussion and presentations all through the week. Also, the Juneau Arts and Culture Center will be closed for the entire week until Sunday afternoon on the 25th. We're getting electricity. It's going to be exciting.
You folks have been working in the dark a little bit too long.
We've had these little gophers going around and around trying to make electricity, and it hasn't been working so well. But so we're really excited about that. If you are thinking about bringing a poster, you wanted to drop your posters off, I will be down there at the Jack between 8 and 10 in the morning, so you can bring your posters down on Tuesday morning, and we will still get them up for you. Toastmasters Club is at noon at the Federal Building. It is registration on Monday for the next Saturday thing. there is an introduction to computers, internet, and email over at the Learning Center, or the Learning Connection, at 5 o'clock. There's a focus writing group, and they're showing Project NIM. On Tuesday, we've got an Alzheimer's workshop, Driving Dilemma. This is at the Juneau Empire Building, third floor conference room. If you want more information about that, 561-3313. It's Harborview Climbing Night at the Zach Gordon Youth Center at 3:30. There is, as I mentioned, the Canary Effect, History of Alaska Native American Indians. This presentation by the Human Rights Commission out at UAS, Egan, Classroom 112. More information about that at 780-4075. On Wednesday, we have also, it's Gastineau Climbing Night at Zach Gordon at 3:30, a membership meeting of the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council, which actually is going to take place at the K2 Conference Room at 5 o'clock. Since we're closed, but we do have a bylaw change, so if you're a member of the Arts Council, please come to that at 5 o'clock. The Congregation Sukkot Shalom is offering a series of talks on what are Jewish fall festivals. If you're interested, go onto our website. There's an email address to get more information about that. We have a film presentation premiere, Made a Machine by Describing the Landscape of Philibout Telephone by Solon Jensen. That's over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon on Wednesday evening at 7:30. 586-2875. It's $10, which includes a raffle for getting a copy of the film. And I really think that's about all I can talk about. It's so much, too many things to do.
Don't forget about the Festival of Seafood on Saturday with tutored beer tasting at 4, followed at 5 o'clock till 7:30 by a great food.
Yeah. And then go see the Divas or something.
Lots of things to do. Don't ever say there's not enough to do here in Juneau.
There's too many things to do. Thank you, Jeff.
You're tuned to KTUO FM in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We also broadcast on these translators. In the Valley and Ock Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. In Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. In Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9. And in Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on GCI Cable Juneau on digital channel 871. We're also live online at www.ktoo.org. Coming up tomorrow at 3 o'clock on a Juneau afternoon, Pat Moore will be your guest host. He'll talk with Alexander Tudinov performing tomorrow night at the First Presenter at the University of Alaska Southeast Egan at the Evening at Egan series. Jeffrey Kai will be here to fill us in on the details for Saturday's Discover Eagle Crest Day. We'll find out about the Rotary Youth Exchange Program with our guest Virginia Stonkus, and we'll get a sample of Ed Littlefield's amalgam of traditional Tlingit lullabies and jazz performing tomorrow night at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center. That's what we're listening to in the background now. That writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow at 3 on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog, isolated showers, low temperatures around 42 degrees with light winds. Forecast for Friday, mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning and a chance of rain in the afternoon and high temperatures around 53 degrees. Forecast for Friday night, rain, low temperatures around 43 degrees, and rain showers predicted for Saturday and looks like Sunday as well. Thank you for tuning in to a Juneau afternoon today. Have a great weekend and great evening.
Yayinach yan deyan, wasayati, wekushetlapcha, agwa ge achsig awe, hu awe, hu awe.
Music of the Little Field and Friends here on KTOO News in Juneau. Coming up next, All Things Considered.